Hi, everybody. Will here with this week's interview chair. This week on the chair, we have Doberman Master, Mr. Andy Linton. Hi, everybody. Here we are today. Well, the interview chair is none other than Mr. Andy Linton. Hi, Andy. How are you?
I'm doing great, Will. Good to see you.
Good to see you. Things are good out there.
Yeah, I'm still one of the lucky guys.
Yeah, that's good to know. Okay. Well, let's get right started then. Get right into it if we can. How old were you and how did you get involved in the sport of dogs, Andy?
When I was 14 or 15, a friend of my mom's gave me a Doberman Pinscher female and told me it was a show quality dog. And at the time, all I cared about was surfing and tennis, living in Southern California. I had hair down past my shoulders, and I thought dog show was the stupidest sounding thing I've ever heard in my life. So, but anyway, somehow they told me that this dog was sired by a brother to, I don't know if you remember, you're probably too young.
But, let's hope so, yeah.
Galaxy's Corey Misselbell and Galaxy's Corey Karina, that Corky showed Misselbell on the West Coast and Janie showed Karina on the East Coast. They were number one and number two working dog.
Yeah, I was way too young.
Misselbell was top. Yeah, exactly. And Misselbell was top dog all breed. So my puppy was sired by their brother. Okay. So it kind of intrigued me eventually when I started figuring out my female might be a little bit of royalty. She was actually not very good, but anyway, that kind of got me going. And she had puppies. She wasn't good enough to win at the show, but of course I didn't know you shouldn't breed them if they're not good enough to win at the show at the time. So we bred her, had some puppies, started going to puppy matches, and next thing you know, the bug bit, and I started working for some handlers and got into it.
Well, what handlers did you work for?
I started out with a guy named Leo Justin, and not very long with him. And then he was a little rougher maybe around the edges, let's just say. But anyway, he taught me a little bit, and then I met a Doberman, exclusive Doberman handler, Fred Flores. He was a breeder and a professional handler of Dobermans. And he taught me that not to stress out and to have fun at dog shows. So I kind of liked his theory. Well, eventually I got to be showing several dogs, and people wanted me to show some dogs. So I kind of went off on my own a little bit, but I thought, I want to do a little better. So then I asked Clay Cody if I could apprentice under him a little bit. So I worked weekends with Clay for about a year. And in that year, I probably learned more than any amount of time I'd ever been in dogs before or since.
I'm sure.
So, I learned so much. Clay has no idea how much I learned watching him and hanging around with him, and Birgit too, of course. They were together at the time. And Maripi was working there. And, you know, I saw how much hard work these guys put into it. And anyway, it kind of gave me motivation to go be a dog handler.
And how old were you then when you worked for Clay Birgit?
Late teens. Yeah. And then I kind of, after I quit working for them, I kind of, people gravitated to me for some reason. I was lucky and I had some decent clients right off the bat. And I had a whippet that won a Best in Show. It was bred by Mary Dukes. It was her first homebred Best in Show winner. And so Mary and I go way back in whippets. And anyway, so I had a little luck with that one, had a good client. And then I, all of a sudden I decided, is this really what I want to do? So I was early 20s and decided to go back to school. And so I quit dog shows and thought I was going to be an attorney. Well, I went to school and came back. I came to that fork in the road that said law school or dog handler. And I don't regret choosing dog handler.
Either does the dog world. So.
Oh, thank you.
So when you came, did you quit school then and come right back into dogs? Or had you started school or you just were just making up your mind?
No, I went to school for a few years and, took a lot of business classes and basic stuff. But I decided I wanted to be a dog handler. And at that point, I was all in. I had goals. I wanted to have the top dog of all breed, and I wanted to win Westminster. And
I think you did that.
Shoot for the top, right? Yeah, within a few years, that happened. So I got lucky.
It comes down to luck and timing and the dog you're showing and you as an expert. So, and that would have been Indy then?
That was Indy, yeah.
Yeah.
And funny thing about Indy, Bill Shelton was handling, obviously, at the time, and we used to compete a lot together. We'd each show 7, 8, 9 Dobermans every dog show. Again, we're against each other in every class, and he was a formidable competitor. But he showed Indy and finished her. Well, he had Sylvia Hammerstrom's giant schnauzer to show. So he couldn't give her priority in the working group. So they hired me because I could give her priority in the working group. Well, that led to me, being her handler. And I'll forever thank Sylvia for hiring Bill because that allowed me to show Indy. So, but anyway, she did really well. That's gave me a boost in my career right from the beginning.
I'm sure that was about 86 or 87.
She was top dog in 88 and won Westminster in 89.
Oh, okay. I mean, you're off. Okay. Or a couple seasons off. Tell me how the Westminster drive went, because there's always a story behind that.
Yeah. Well, Indy's is kind of unusual. She had been top dog all breed in 1988, came into the garden in 1989 as the favorite for sure. And she had won the Science Title Award and all that stuff. She had all the press and she was really, an awesome dog. So that didn't hurt either. But we flew from LAX and into New York. And when we arrived there, we pulled her out of the crate. She obviously had signs of bloat.
Oh, wow.
Fortunately, Marjorie Martorella, who I was showing a pointer for at the time, knew right where to take us to, the Animal Medical Center in New York. So they took care of her there, and she skipped the Science Diet Award. She was in recovery over the weekend. Well, came time Monday to show her, and she had lost a few pounds. But that whole hospital, they had 24-hour surveillance on her. They knew who she was. And they monitored her and took care of her and got her in shape. And on Monday morning, I showed her in the breed, and it was the weirdest thing because usually, you're proud with this showy dog. I was just glad she was alive.
Oh,
so
sure.
I'm sitting in the, and I'm afraid, is she okay? I didn't know anything about the situation. Health-wise, I was still scared. And that, by the way, that's the only dog I've ever seen bloat in my life. Was that dog at that time. But anyway, we go in the ring on Monday morning, and Bonnie Clark was judging the breed. And I was in there, and I just kept Indy in the corner sitting down, and I'm just kneeling down with her crying in the ring during the breed. It was so emotional. There's all these things happening. It's my last time to show her. She's alive. Is she okay? And there was just so much emotion going on. Well, anyway, she won the breed, and instantly Bonnie came over and said, "What is going on? What has happened?" And I had, we had kept it under wraps that she had bloated all weekend. Well, that night, by the time we got in the group, I felt pretty confident that she was going to be okay, and she was looking better, and her body was coming back together. She didn't look her best in the breed, to be honest with you. She was, you know, lost a couple pounds, like I said. But we got in the group that night, and you know, she was her usual self and won the group. And
yeah, you would never have guessed. I was there watching that. You would never have guessed. She looked amazing.
Yeah. So anyway, then the story came out, and then the next night for Best in Show, oh my gosh, it was something to behold, because everybody in the building knew her story at that point, I think. And I don't know if you did or not, but
I did. I want to hear your story. I want to hear your side. So
yeah. So anyway, so she won under Mrs. Freeman, and that was that.
That was that. Best in Show Westminster with Doberman under Muriel Freeman.
Yeah, but it was. I'll tell you what. People often ask, you know, what's your best, most favorite win, and you would expect it to be. Is your most exciting win Westminster?
Mine?
Yeah.
I would have to say, yeah, because I had found P when she was a puppy. So, yeah, I think it was, yeah.
Okay. Mine, that was pure relief. That wasn't exhilarating excitement to win that Westminster. My dog is alive. You know, that's all I can keep thinking is she's alive.
Sure.
And so there wasn't that exhilaration that you would expect to normally have. So that's not my biggest win or most exciting win, but it's I guess overall the most satisfying.
Well, and just the way she performed for you after all she's been through, you know, that's, she must have loved you and loved the sport. So,
well, she had great heart. I mean, when you talk about heart, that was a dog with heart, and she was. You know, she'd walk around the dog show like a plow horse. And as soon as she walked through the ring entrance, she was magic.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love that feel. I love seeing that happen. So where did we go from there? How was your whirlwind after Westminster with Indy?
Well, it was interesting because it was when we were down on the floor after we'd won Best in Show, a couple of amazing people came up to congratulate me. Mrs. Clark came up and said, "That was great that you won this. Well-deserved. Congratulations. Now, can I give you some advice? Never take bad dogs and try to win because of the reputation you just built for yourself." And that's always stuck with me. Don't show bumps.
Right. You know? Yeah.
So, and then another cool one was Bill Trainer walked up to me, and he welcomed me to the club, and I'll never forget that too. So those two people coming up to me right after the Best in Show was over was something I'll never forget.
That is amazing. Yeah, I got two phone calls after the group. Actually, I got Janie and George both called me after the group, and then I got Mark sent me a message welcoming to the club. Those do mean a lot. There's no question. So,
yeah.
So did you spend the next day touring New York with Indy? I don't remember.
Yeah, we went on the, you know, it wasn't as flamboyant as it is now, I think. You know, we went on one of the talk shows and went to Sardi's and that kind of stuff. Didn't make the rounds like the Best in Show winner currently makes, I think. Mm-hmm. But, it was fun. We, you know, got to stay that extra day and relish the win. So it was good.
How did Indy take all that? Was she good?
Oh yeah. 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 She could handle any situation. She was totally good.
So where did it go from there?
Well, I was committed to being a dog handler at that point. And that was, 31 years ago. So here I am. I think that's, is that, yeah, 31
yeah,
years ago.
Yeah.
32 maybe. 32 years if my math is right.
Yeah.
But I feel so lucky to have this job that I have. What other job can you make your own schedule, play with dogs, and if you like people, be around people, which I do. And it just, have a little friendly competition. It's just, you can't beat it. You can't beat this job.
It's true. So what happened with Annie Linton after Westminster? Where did you go from there though?
go to the next dog show. You know, I started a new dog and he did pretty well. And it probably that Westminster obviously kicked off a dog handling career. I wouldn't have had the good fortune, had I not had the good fortune to have gotten lucky at Westminster, I wouldn't have had all the opportunities they've had to be a dog handler with the great clients and great dogs. That one thing led to another and just spiraled upward for me. And I just pretty lucky.
Can you just go through a couple of the dogs that come to your mind? I know you don't want to miss anybody and we always say that, but I just want to hear some highlights. That's all.
Well, another Doberman about 10 years later was Sarah, who doubled Indy's best in show record and was Indy when she retired. She was the top winning Doberman of all time. Sarah, when I retired her, she was the top winning Doberman of all time. And it was interesting. I retired her 4 years of age, Sarah, that is. And she had 99 best in shows. And everybody's like, why don't you join the Hunter Club? And I didn't care. So yeah. I didn't do it, but I don't think it would have been too tricky. But, speaking of Sarah, we were talking about our most favorite win. My most exciting win was with Serengeti. And in September of, 1996, 97, something like that. These people sent the Galligans sent their Doberman bitch to me to show at the Doberman National Futurity. Well, I took one look at her and I said, this might be the best one ever. And I don't want to show her at the Futurity. I want to show her for the next 2 or 3 years. And so they said, oh, okay. So I practiced for about 2 months with that girl, 2 or 3 months before I ever showed her. And everything was geared towards Louisville, which was, at the time, a 5,700 dog show. And Mrs. Clark was doing best in show there. And I absolutely dreamt and envisioned how I was going to show in best in show to Mrs. Clark with this Doberman for 5 months. And, she took off right away and started her in January. She won like 10 groups and 3 or 4 bests and just really started off hot and came to the Louisville show. And sure enough, you couldn't have dreamt it up any better than I dreamt it up. She was in there for best in show and Mrs. Clark walked from behind the curtain, came out, and I was showing her just how I wanted to, all as far away from her as I could get, just like I know Mrs. Clark would have liked. And she walked in with her presence, an aura that she carried with her. And I know she stopped when she saw the Doberman. And I'll never forget her because it took a lot to stop her, as you would know. And she gave her best in show. And that was the most exciting win I've ever had in my dog show career.
That would be amazing. It's amazing how many of us do that. How we envision certain events before they happen. We try to. I always tell my students to make the mistakes in your head before you walk in the ring. It's the same idea. So it's
amazing. If you can't dream it, you can't do it.
That's right. And like I've always watched you and admired you because you just disappear when you show your Dobermans. And when I was out there, a couple of years ago before the pandemic hit, I got to see you firsthand. And it's always amazing to watch you, Andy. Who influenced you to you obviously have your own style, but we all are influenced by certain individuals. Who influenced you?
Originally, when I first started going to dog shows in Southern California, it was a mecca for great handlers. I mean, there were so many great handlers, Corky and Walt Schellenberger and Mike Shea and Timmy and, Eddie Boys, all the Clay Cody, all the Terrier guys were amazing. All the Poodle guys were amazing. There were so many Doberman handlers that were great handlers. And I hate to forget anybody, but gosh, I used to really watch Corky cause he was the man at the time in Dobermans. And, I never really got a chance to tell Corky how much I appreciated his skill level. you know, we talked a lot and we knew each other for a million years and everything, but I never really got to tell him that because we didn't always get along famously, but I had a lot of respect for that guy. But as far as, you know, it's interesting when I show a Doberman, I think get away from him or think style like Timmy showing a poodle.
Yeah.
I try to envision that sometimes. And then other dogs that you're a little more regimented with, I think Clay and his mechanical style with a wire fox terrier where everything's just perfect and controlled and head carriage is perfect. And, you know, you think that with a little dog. And I've been so lucky to watch so many great handlers, you included, actually, to be honest with you. I think I've told you this story before, but I was at the garden and I'm just sitting in the stands having some popcorn and some water and watching. I forgot even what setter it was, maybe an English setter. And I'm like, I didn't know you at the time, but I'm watching this guy who has his dog put down magnificently, like no trim I'd ever seen. And I thought, he didn't have the best dog, but he deserved to win. You were so good that I'll never forget watching that. And it sticks in my mind. And I, like I said, I didn't know who you were. And somebody said, oh, that's Will Alexander. He's really good. I'm like, oh, yeah, he is really good. But that's definitely me.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
But yeah, I've been fortunate, you know, to watch Mike Canalizo show his Afghan, Chris Terrell show his Afghan, two different styles. And guess what? You can learn so much from both of them.
Oh, for sure.
You know, but the poodle people you learn so much from teach. I probably learn more watching poodle people about carriage, both the handler and the dog, than any other group of people. But, you know, you watch the terrier people mostly have a similar way of doing things. But when it came to style and class, you know, some of those poodle guys, they did it for me.
Oh, I know. You remember Timmy and Mark Shanoff? Those guys just disappeared behind the dogs. The dogs look so glamorous.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then, you know, a lot of the sporting, you know, I watched Corky show pointers and sporting dogs and Walt Schellenberger, the way he floated around the ring moving a dog. And, you know, speaking about Schellenberger, the way I kind of thought, I think you remember me saying dog show sounded stupid to me. But one time I went to one of my first dog shows I ever went to, and I was kind of an avid sports guy, like baseball, football, basketball, that sort of thing. And I subscribed to Sports Illustrated at the time. And I'll never forget, Columbia River, the traveler, the short hair won best in show at the garden, I think in about 74 or something like that. Well, I had read that article and it was all big centerfold picture of traveler, the short hair and with Joe. Well, I went to a dog show and I'll be darned I go walking by these X pens and this lady's got, it looks like the same lady from the Sports Illustrated, you know, story. And I said, is that the dog that won best in show at Westminster? You know, totally fanboying this thing. And she goes, yeah. And I said, oh, my gosh, could I pet him? She goes, better yet, he needs to go for a walk. Could you take him for a walk? And I'm like, really? And so I took Traveler for a walk. And I think that moment is when I got hooked, because that dog did it for me. He was so cool and so awesome. And the lady, Joe, who I didn't know from Adam, you know, just was, she probably got me hooked on dogs just because I got to walk that famous dog.
That's an amazing story. I've never heard that story before.
Yeah. I think Joe did that with a lot of kids because she was that cool.
Wow. You know,
and then when Ricky, you know, I didn't mention that I also worked a little bit for Rick Shishudian, and that was an experience.
I'm sure.
But, you know, as passionate, I'm going to call it passionate, as passionate as Clay was and as passionate as Ricky was towards everything dog related, You know, they always were cool with me. And I think it's because they knew I was there to learn. I worked for no pay. I didn't take a penny from anybody. And I just wanted to learn.
Sure. That's amazing.
And so I think they knew that. And so I guess they knew that because they always treated me with respect. Clay did, and so did Ricky. But boy, talk about a wealth of knowledge. And I miss being able to talk dogs with people like that, because you just don't get to so much anymore.
That's true.
But
would you consider those your mentors then? Or did you?
Yeah, oh my gosh. I mean, I just was so fortunate to be able, you know, after you win the garden, you have a lot more access. And so I had access to some of the greatest dog people ever. I counted Annie Clark as a mentor. I mean, everybody. Pat Trotter is one of my best mentors. I watched her in Southern California dominate with elk hounds for how many years? And I watched a lot of the moves I have showing dogs, I got from her. You know, there's just everybody that was great in their breed, it seemed like I ended up having access to. And the all breed handlers, they were just kind to me. Everybody's been kind to me in this dog game and very open with their knowledge and very sharing and helpful.
It's amazing schooling, isn't it? There's no question.
Absolutely. Yeah. I never did the whole thing where you go live in somebody's kennel. I never did that. And I don't have a kennel now per se. I only keep 8 or 10 dogs. And, you know, I have like a 2000 square foot building that have indoor runs. And, but I only keep 8 to 10 dogs. I bought a kennel early in my career and I was going to do that. And I decided not to. I actually bought a place that was licensed for a commercial kennel and built the kennel from scratch and then never used it. I ended up selling it, turning a little profit, made a buck, and always kept this. I used to, before that, I'd show 25, 30 dogs a show, but I never, and a lot of those were ringside, Whippets and Vizslas and Dobermans, and it was a pretty good gig.
Oh, for sure.
You know, not having, you know, it's a lot different than trimming terriers or trimming setters or trimming poodles or anything like that. But I've always subscribed to the work smart, not hard theory. I appreciate those of you that work hard, but
you work hard as well, Andy.
Well, I mean, it's all relative.
Yeah,
it's all relative.
So over the years, you've seen a bunch of dogs. Is there other than dogs that are being shown right now, is there any dogs that stick out in your mind that you wished you could have been a part of, or you just enjoyed watching that left marks in your mind's eye?
You know, one of the most exciting things I've ever seen that I still get chills when there's a couple of them, as I know you've got some too, but I'll never forget the first time. Well, let me go back before that. At one point, Peter Green showed a fox terrier called Spot On.
Yeah.
And I knew that Ricky was getting this dog ready for Santa Barbara for Pete to fly in and show it. And at the time, Cliff Hallmark had, I forgot the dog's name, but he had the number one dog all breed. And he came into Santa Barbara. Well, unbeknownst to him, Peter walks in with this dog that Spot On, that Ricky's been trimming incognito for months, had him perfect. And I'll never forget watching those dogs in the ring at Santa Barbara. And Spot On won. And I still get chills seeing that old dog at that, because he was old at that point. You know, he had won the group at the garden. Yep, he was an old dog. And but he looked amazing. And that's one of the most exciting things I've ever seen. And I also, the first time I saw Pepsi, that Chris Terrell's Afghan, was at Santa Barbara weekend. And that dog just took my breath away when I saw him, and I'll never forget how much excitement he caused within me just to watch that dog. He was something special.
I never got to see him other than, I think, maybe the garden. I think I saw him. That's the only time I ever got to see him.
Yeah, he, that my first experience watching him was, he was standing at the front of the line in the hound group, and I was walking by, and I thought, wow, that's a good-looking Afghan. And it's his turn to go make a triangle in this big Santa Barbara group ring. And he does a high old silver and takes off. And Chris is running as fast as he can. And this dog's keeping his head and top line and tail set and not touching the ground. And Chris is running as fast as he can. And this dog's just not even touching the ground, floating all the way around. And it was, he comes back and nails the free stack and then just looks right at the judge and dares him to beat him. And I'm, I'll never forget that one either. That was a performance that sticks with me. And I would always try to emulate, but I never could.
Well, maybe not in your eye, but I'm sure you did in other people's eyes. Cause I tell you, when I watch you show Dobermans, it's, I can't stop watching. I have to watch the whole time.
It's kind of me.
So what, let me go back to this. How about advice? What advice would you give a young handler?
Pay workers comp. Don't skip the business part of doing this job. And, treat your people fairly and nice and take out taxes, do everything by the book. And it may seem costly at the beginning, but in the long run, you don't end up fighting with IRS. You don't end up getting sued. All kinds of good things happen, and all kinds of bad things don't happen if you just play by the rules.
That's interesting, because you said you'd worked for Clay. When I spoke to Clay about this, he talked about the business end of it as well. So,
well, I'm not nearly as business minded as Clay. Clay's done very well.
That's for sure. What about judging? Are you going to go on to be a judge?
No, the procedure for becoming a judge is ridiculous, and I love judging when there's good dogs to choose from, but I don't see myself ever judging, really. As much as I love it, the problem is I don't believe, well, I should be careful what I say here, but I would be a really good judge. I know that. And the hoops they make you jump through, I feel like I've already jumped through the hoops. And somebody like yourself, you've already jumped through the hoops. Now you're going to jump through their hoops and check boxes and go to seminars when you could give the seminar. It's ridiculous.
No, I agree with that aspect of it. There's no question.
Somebody like yourself, in my opinion, they AKC or Canadian Kennel Club, whoever you're applying with, should say, Will, what would you feel comfortable doing? What are you not going to have any anxiety over judging? Which breeds are those? Do them. That's how it should be.
I agree with that. I think they're not necessarily talking about myself, but we've missed out on so many potentially good judges because of those procedures. Right.
And the, you know, people talk about, I might get a little out of my lane here, but people talk about what's hurting dog shows, you know, this and that and the other too many shows, blah, blah, blah. It's the judging. The judging is what hurts dog shows, because fair-minded, logical, smart, intelligent people have a hard time understanding the lack of logic and sensibility of judging in general. And I think that scares a lot of people who would otherwise love to be in the sport of dogs, but they view it as a game of dogs. Mm-hmm. So go ahead.
You go ahead.
That being said, I still believe in the long run, and this I preach every dog show, somebody hears me say this, the quality, condition, and presentation wins dog shows in the long run. Yeah. And if any one of those three things is not as good as your competition, any one of those three things, you could be better 2 out of 3, 1 out of 3. But if any one of those three things is lacking, you've opened the door to losing. And so you have to be aware of that. And when I am successful at remembering what I preach, and then you don't call foul, you don't cry foul, you don't whine, you think, okay, was my dog better? Was my dog in as good a condition? Was my dog presented as well as it could be presented? And it actually forces you to get better because you're self-analyzing your situation. And so it does two things. It calms you down because I personally have never handled a dog perfectly yet. So I can always go, I could have done this better. I could have done that better, you know, with every dog that I've ever shown. And so it lends itself to self-improvement, and it keeps you sane by not whining and crying foul all the time.
Those are good words, Andy. I like those. And they make a lot of sense. So we're not going to be judged, but you have judged, haven't you? You've done the sweepstakes and whatnot.
Oh yeah, I've done the feature at the National a couple of times, top 20s. I've judged the Doberman National in Mexico, and I've judged quite a bit actually over the years.
So it's not beyond if the Doberman Club calls you up and they want you to judge the National. Well, you'll do it then.
I would do it in a moment's notice.
Good,
but the Doberman Club won't let you do it unless you're a licensed judge.
Well, how come?
They voted on that. They didn't. I think the powers that be don't want to lose their spot in line to judge.
Well, that's a shame. They're going to miss out on a lot of good judging then.
Well, absolutely. I agree. Not myself, speaking of myself, but you know, there's Doberman people, you know, Gwen DeMilta, Mo Miyagawa.
Oh yeah.
Well, you know, there's a lot of, well, Mo's not handling anymore, but Gwen's handling. I'd be honored to show under her at the Doberman National, you know, somebody like that. So
most definitely.
Yeah. You know, you'd get a great opinion.
So what about superstitions? Do you have any superstitions when it comes to showing dogs?
No.
No?
Good. None. I use a Resco leash tied to a collar. That's all I use. I'm anti-bling.
Me too. Good job. So what's next then? You have some dogs in the wings here. Are you still excited about doing all this?
You know, when you get a dog that you're excited about, that's what keeps you just humming at this dog game. And I've got a couple in the works that I'm working on getting, and you know how that goes. So if it comes together, you're excited and pumped up, just like you got a new puppy, right? So, but I really love my job. It's a good gig. Excellent. And that, you know, even if you see somebody else, I was looking at Amy Rutherford showed me a smooth last weekend, and I thought, that is a beautiful, you know, puppy. And I'm so excited for her. You know, she used her old dog's frozen semen from I don't know how many years ago and came up with this cool litter. And that's the kind of stuff that's fun to do after the dog show and play around with the puppies and hopefully find the next great one. But whenever you're at a dog show and you happen to walk by a ring and get excited about a dog that looks unusually good, hey, that's what this is all about.
Well,
for
no
me.
Question. Yeah. There's nothing like walking by a ring and spotting that dog. It makes your day, doesn't it?
So it really does.
No matter what breed.
And, you know, I have a 13-year-old daughter. I have a 25-year-old daughter and a 13-year-old daughter, and they're my world. And my 13-year-old is pretty adept at judging dogs. And it's hilarious because I can have as good a conversation with her about certain breeds discussing them as I can with anybody in dogs. And she's got a great eye and she's a pretty darn good handler herself. And so that makes it fun bringing her to some dog shows. She obviously doesn't get to go during the school year too much, mm-hmm. but that makes the dog shows fun too.
Oh, for sure. Okay, one last question, and I'll let you get back to your world. If you were to run into the 20-year-old Andy Linton, what advice would you give him now?
I would say be a dog handler. Don't be a lawyer like I did. You know what's weird, Will, is I don't have a lot of regrets. I've always felt like I'm one of the luckiest people I've ever known. And I know I'm lucky to feel that way. I have been lucky and blessed. And so I really can't say, there's a few things I do differently business-wise. But for the most part, you know, just be kind to other people and be respectful. And that's all. The only advice I would give, be a little more humble when you're younger.
These things happen when we're younger.
Yeah. but overall, I have very few regrets in my life.
Those are good words to live by. I appreciate your time, Andy, and I'm glad you seem to still have that passion brewing in you, and it's always fun to watch you. I hope to see you soon. So,
well, thanks, Will. I'm honored that you had me on your show.
Well, thank you, Andy. Appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
Thanks, Andy. I knew it'd be great. Good to see you. If you like what you're seeing here, make sure you press the like, share, and subscribe button. If you want to get a hold of me, get a hold of me at dogshowtips@gmail.com. If you want to find out what's happening in Will's world, go to willalexander.net. And don't forget about our podcasts, The Dog Show Drive with Wayne Cavanaugh and myself, every Thursday.